This is Audible.
Tantor Audio presents Defiance by Shelley Crane. Narrated by Chris Dukart. Keep listening after Defiance for the bonus Shelley Crane novella, Reverence, narrated by Kyle McCarley. One thing was certain in my mind. Change was necessary, and the truth was always the best option. But that didn't mean that it was going to be a painless journey. Maggie. 1.
It's so nice to finally meet you,
she was saying.
Rachel has gone on and on about you for weeks now over the phone, she said,
her accent endearing and sweet. But even with that, I could barely concentrate on what the woman from the Martinez clan of Prague was saying. I stared Marla down in absolute confusion and disgust as she chatted with someone. Had she said what I thought she said before? It couldn't be. We'd only been at the palace for less than 20 minutes, and I already had a new enemy. Though, I guess Marla wasn't new. She'd been working behind the scenes, playing tricks and toying with our minds. Caleb's hand, shaking in mine, brought me back to my reality as the woman waved and said her goodbyes to me. I looked over to calm him, but had to stop my breath from catching out loud. He wasn't shaking with fright or confusion. He was shaking with fury. I followed his gaze to Marcus, who was standing and smirking behind Marla. Caleb's mind ran through the multiple times that Marcus had injured or hurt me, the latest being cutting my hair when I'd fallen asleep at the beach house. His fingers squeezed mine a little too tightly, and I flexed them to get his attention. He jerked his gaze over to me and rubbed my fingers gently in apology before turning back to the raven-haired traitor and her family. Marla laughed as Caleb pulled me behind him as she made her way to us once more. But she was headed to someone behind us.
"Donald," she sang, and lifted her hand in greeting. "You're looking very fit."
"Oh?"
an older man said in surprise and smiled, showing a mouthful of perfectly straight white teeth.
"Why, thank you, Marla dear. It's been too long since you've graced us."
"It really has," she answered.
"I'm here to remedy that." "Well, good. And your champion?"
Marla turned and hid her frown in her hands. She shook her head and lifted her face to him. Her tears might have looked real to him, but we knew otherwise.
"He passed on. A terrible accident just yesterday."
"Oh my, that is terrible. Poor Sykes. Could we have been notified, we would have held a memorial for him. But as you know, there are no phones here."
"Yes, well, his wife wouldn't have wanted the attention anyway. She's quiet, and though she did come with us, she's grieving in her own way." The councilman nodded as if he knew exactly what she meant. Then he said,
"I see. It's hard, I know.
As a matter of fact, I'd better go check on her now." Marla spouted and waved to him as her entourage followed her quickly out some double doors that led into a large hallway.
"It was so good to see you,"
she called over her shoulder.
"You too, dear."
Then he turned to us, and he saw me for the first time. Correction, he saw the visionary. He gasped and fell to one knee in front of me. He took my hand, kissing the backs of my fingers and pressing them to his head before looking back up to me. His eyes took a long time before they left the mark on my neck. I tried to be still and portray the object on display that he apparently thought I was. Finally, he spoke.
"Oh, visionary, we are so glad you've come. We've waited long and hard years for your return."
I swallowed my sarcastic response. Waited? Long and hard years for my return? None of that seemed right. For one, they didn't seem to be waiting, and for two, they sure weren't in hard times. I looked him over. He was wearing what had to be an expensive suit. His shoes were shinier than the marble floor we were standing on, and his eyebrows were perfectly aligned and trimmed. He looked severely pampered. And as for the third thing, the thing about my return, what did that mean? Did he think I was reincarnated or something? "It's nice to meet you," I said lamely.
"Donald, this is Maggie Masters. soon to be Maggie Jacobson,
Caleb explained. He looked over at me and smiled.
My significant.
Had my mind closed off like Caleb had told me to? He had said, with all the worshipping going on, that my mind would overload for sure in this place. I tried to open up a little to hear the councilman's thoughts. All I heard and felt was disgust. It wafted over me, almost like when Marcus's mind was open to me. Like slime. I figured I must not be focusing on the councilman right, so I backed away from his mind and settled back on Caleb.
Maggie.
Donald tested my name on his tongue. He didn't sound as though he was impressed.
Is that short for something? Margaret, maybe.
I almost sighed. Almost. No, sir. Just Maggie.
And Peter?
He said clearly, but with a little inflection. He peered around Caleb, and I did too. Peter was standing there with a smile pasted on his handsome face. A big, fake smile, with tight, crinkled eyes. The councilman and Peter stared at each other.
Donald,
Peter said. He folded his arms over his chest, the material bunching and twisting with the tightness, his head turning ever so slightly to the right.
How nice to see you, as always. I'm sure,
Donald rebutted with equal amounts of sarcasm. I felt seriously uncomfortable and fidgeted with Caleb's sleeve.
Why don't we get started on the introductions? The visionary needs to get to know her people.
My heart jumped in my throat.
What?
I squeaked, and Caleb eased his arm around my waist.
It's okay,
he whispered.
He just means that he'll announce you to everyone. Yes, dear, unless you'd like to say a few words.
Donald hedged. No, no, that won't be necessary. I answered quickly and tried not to gulp.
As for the rest of you,
Donald addressed the rest of our family who stood behind us.
It's so good to see you all again. Please, come in.
He lifted an eyebrow and pursed his lips in disapproval.
You don't have to just stand in the doorway like that.
Donald, Gran drawled and came around Caleb and I. Don't throw out your condescension on us now. We're all standing in the doorway because you're blocking our way, you old star-struck fool.
Oh,
Donald said abruptly and looked around.
Quite right. Forgive me, visionary, you must think me terribly improper.
No, I mumbled. He waved his arm for us to enter the grand room. I felt someone at my back and turned to find Kyle. His hand was on my shoulder and a sympathetic look on his face. Beside him was Lynn, with a tight grip on his hand as she looked around at the golden room.
Time to face the music,
Kyle whispered, and then patted Caleb on the back. We both act like we're going to war or something, Lynn muttered. Caleb laughed.
No, we just know that Maggie is absolutely going to hate this.
Hate what? I asked.
This,
he said and pointed. I looked up to see a room full of people who were just a few seconds ago bustling and talking. Now, in the eerie quiet of the room, I could see them all falling to one knee and bowing their heads to me. It was a struggle to keep the disgusted grimace from my face. Everyone just waited. It dawned that they were waiting for me. Crap. Thank you. You can stand, I said. A few of them came forward to me, and each in turn did their little reverence bow, kissing fingers, bowing head, and touching it to my hand. When they finally rose, I smiled and tried not to cringe into Caleb's side. Everyone else stood and watched. A few well-dressed individuals made their way to a platform that had a long table, covered in white linen. The seven of them sat, and then looked our way. At first, I thought they were looking at me, but Gran squeezed my shoulder as she went by. She made her way and stood at the end of the table. They all sat down together, making a total of 8 apparently important people. I was confused. Caleb leaned in and spoke low.
The council, or the assembly, as they like to call themselves. There's a member from each family. Gran represents us.
Why not your dad? He's the champion.
It can't be the champion. The champion must always be free for our family, and not tied down to any other position. Technically, Gran, since she is an assembly member, should live here at the palace with the rest of them, but she refuses.
Did they pick her? I asked, thinking the assembly probably wouldn't want such a vocal and, speak-her-mind type on the council.
Nope. Each family chooses their own representative.
He grinned.
Who else could we vote in but Gran?
I giggled, causing a few people to turn and stare. Caleb just ignored them and put an arm around my shoulder, but I couldn't help but wonder what the strange look on their faces was for. I opened my mind, focusing on one guy in particular, who looked pretty upset. His gaze latched onto mine, and I immediately felt his jealousy. He wasn't angry. He just wanted. He wanted what he'd been told his whole life was his only way to have a family, and to love someone. His mind swamped mine with thoughts of imprints coming back, the possibility of his soulmate being in this very room, that I was the catalyst, the thing that would bring it all back to them. I smiled at him, and he seemed shocked by the gesture. He smiled back and bowed his head.
That's Paul, of the Patrona clan,
Caleb said quietly.
And beside him is Felipe. Do you remember me telling you about him?
Yes, the other human besides Gran and me. Felipe looked over and saw us looking. He waved to Caleb and bowed his head to me. He started to come our way, but a child grabbed his pant leg and made him stop. He laughed and picked the girl up. Everyone stared at Kyle and Lynn as well, the looks on their faces with just as much longing. Kyle was oblivious, but Lynn knew what was at stake. She cringed into Kyle's side in an uncharacteristic move from the spunky girl I knew. Jen was pulled by Maria to stand next to us. Maria took Caleb's in my arm and yawned as she leaned her head against him. He chuckled at her. I looked around the room then, as Donald started addressing everyone loudly, but I tuned him out. Everyone's mind was the same, and they all seemed as taken with me as Donald had been. They wanted what they thought I had to offer, their lives back. Little did they know that I had no idea what the heck I was doing. I really hoped that I could help them because desperation seemed to be the mood of the day.
Maggie,
I heard, and looked back up to see Donald watching me curiously. Yes?
I wondered if you'd like to say a few words to your people.
I looked at him and realized that though he asked me earlier if I wanted to speak, and I told him that I did not, that he wasn't really giving me the option, he was just being polite. Caleb sighed beside me, and I glanced at him to see that he understood all too well that the assembly had no intentions of letting me sit quietly. I steeled myself. I had Caleb's hand in mine, his blood and love running through my veins, and his heart in my chest. I could do this.
You bet your pretty tush you can.
I tried not to giggle at his words in my head. I squeezed his hand and turned to face the whole room, a bouquet of different people and colors. I didn't wait. I just went for it. I just wanted to say that it's really good to meet you all. I hope we can get to know each other well this week. And since I was in a position for everyone to hear me at once. And please, you don't have to bow to me. I'm just like you. I know that you are anxious about my being here and what that could mean, but we'll figure it all out together. I realize the importance of this, and I promise you that I am taking this seriously. But my name is Maggie. Please call me that. Then I smiled. I looked around the room. Some were smiling back, some were just watching, and some were in absolute shock, but they weren't looking at me. I followed their glances over my shoulder to find a red-faced Donald.
Visionary,
he said clearly, and I got his meaning by it. No one was to call me Maggie.
I know that you are young, but you have an obligation to our people, being what you are. You can't allow them to treat you as some commoner because you are not. And you are not some measly human anymore either.
He sneered, loud and clear. I understand, I told him. I'm not shirking my duties. But I am the visionary, and I don't feel the necessity to treat me as something else other than just one of you. I plan to try to figure out what it is I'm supposed to do while I'm here.
Forgive me, visionary, but we know exactly what you are supposed to do.
He came around the table and stood in front of us all.
Welcome home,
he boomed, the echo eerie in the big room.
You are to come here for good, rule our people, and live with the council as has been planned for centuries.
What was I supposed to say to that? Peter touched my arm. He gave me a look. I focused on him, assuming he had something to say.
I assumed they were going to try to do this, Maggie. As much as I love my people, they can be adamant and downright obsessive about tradition and formality. Just don't get worked up. We'll figure all this out together. I won't let them bully you, I promise.
I nodded as Peter turned to Donald and smiled that same smile as before. The one that said, you are seriously full of crap.
Donald, Maggie is only 17 years old and was a human. She has human ties, a father and brother, friends. You cannot expect her to uproot herself completely and come to live here, not to mention Caleb. What about Caleb?
Donald said smugly.
I extended no such invitation to Caleb to live with us. He is her significant.
Peter replied tightly.
And if she chooses to keep him here, he may stay. But that is, to the visionary's discretion, how she handles that situation.
My brows bunched in confusion, but he went on.
I understand that she needs his touch to survive, but the visionary is too important and refined to be consumed with petty puppy love and insignificant use of her time.
Caleb rumbled beside me, and I gripped his arm out of instinct. What was the council trying to pull?
Therefore, if the visionary so wishes it, she may keep Caleb here, in the common quarters, as it wouldn't be proper for him to stay with her in her portion of the palace. Like hell.
Caleb growled. 2.
Donald!
Peter roared.
I beg your pardon. But are you suggesting that Maggie keep my son here as some sort of...
consort? I finished for him. Just the thought of them suggesting that I use Caleb for such a thing was enough to make my blood boil. And boil it did. The lights began to flicker a little above us. Everyone looked around in confusion, but I never removed my eyes from the individuals at the table. I looked at them each in turn and told them with my gaze that this was idiocy. They all looked away, as if scared of me, or ashamed for sitting by quietly while Donald lorded over everyone. So, if they were scared of me, then why were they pulling this crap? Except Gran, of course. She just smiled and watched. Donald bristled at my tone and cleared his throat as he took a slight step back. Then he swatted at an energy ribbon as it floated in the air near his head. His eyes bulged when it went straight through his skin. I looked behind me to see that there were lots of energy ribbons in the air. I took a deep breath, understanding the blue menace was coming directly from me. Caleb tried to touch my skin, his hands running up my arms to my face. But in honesty, he was so upset himself that he wasn't calming me much.
What's going on here?
Another assembly member shouted.
Who's doing this?
I am, I answered in a hushed voice, and everyone stopped. Caleb slid his hands from my face slowly and turned to glare at the assembly once more.
It's not her fault. Maggie does this when she's upset, so stop it,
he ground out.
It was not our intention to upset you, my dear visionary,
Donald said, and made his way back to the table to his chair. I was glad I wasn't close enough to get a good look at the condescension on his face that I could hear in his voice.
What part was it that...
He stopped. I followed his gaze to my wrist. Crap. He turned a couple more shades of red. He glared at Peter, then Caleb. I watched as his brow shot up in accusation. Or maybe it was curiosity.
So, you've mutualized with our visionary?
He asked, causing Caleb's grip to tighten on me.
You tainted our visionary before you were married?
Now, hold on a second,
Peter interrupted.
There's no law.
It's a matter of propriety,
he bellowed, and stood banging a wrinkled fist on the table. Jen pulled Maria back to her and looked like she wanted to cover her poor daughter's ears.
Something you should have taught her as the champion of your clan.
Well, he's been a little bit busy saving our lives, I muttered from behind Caleb.
What was that, visionary?
I straightened my back and stood closer to Caleb. I grabbed his hand, letting our wrist tattoos show off our love for each other, but also the fact that we mutualized. It was not something dirty, and the fact that he was trying to take my perfect, happy, delicious memory of that night away from me wasn't going to fly. Caleb grinned as he heard my inner rant, and chuckled as I turned to the table before me. I spoke clear and loud. I said, "We've been a little busy trying to stay alive. The fact that I did or didn't mutualize with my significant shouldn't matter to you. The fact that we were almost killed by members of the Virtuoso who are in this very room and you're doing nothing about it is what we should discuss. And it's Maggie, not visionary, sir."
"What is this trickery?"
another assemblyman asked.
"Are you saying that someone in this room tried to kill you? How? When?"
"Not just me, but yes, on more than one occasion."
"Who?"
he repeated louder.
"Maggie's pregnant," Marla blurted out. I gasped and started to yell back, but everyone in the room, especially the council members, stopped and stared at me. Or wait, no. They were glaring at Caleb. Crap. Things were about to get ugly.
"That is not true,"
Caleb shouted.
"Marla's trying to deflect. The Watsons kidnapped Maggie and kept her away from me for days. Then just a couple of days ago, they sent someone to my house, and they tried to kill us there, too."
"Now how can we believe you?"
Donald chimed.
"The proof that you mutualized with her before you were married is right there for all to see. If you would mutualize with her before marriage, then why not do more than that,
You can believe me because I'm telling you. We've done nothing more than mutualize."
"And I say so, too," I butted in to defend Caleb. "I'm not pregnant, and haven't done anything to make it so that I was."
"Trust has to be earned,"
Donald said.
"And I'm sorry to say it, but we don't know you well enough to trust you like that. Marla has been one of us since birth."
A big, burly older man stood up from the council table and said in a flabbergasted voice,
"But she's the visionary."
"Assembly, I'm sorry to be the stickler here," Marla continued in a voice that strained with its fake sincerity.
"But it would be so easy for them to say that she's not pregnant, without any proof. She doesn't want Caleb to be punished."
"Punished?" I yelled, and looked at Caleb. "What is she talking about?" I hissed. He leaned close.
"I told you that our kind waits until we're married."
"But you didn't say you'd be punished otherwise."
"Is that a problem, visionary? I thought you said there was no indiscretion performed."
Donald piped in. Indiscretion? This whole day was going so far from the way that I imagined it. Before I could speak again, Peter did.
"I informed the council of the Watsons' ploys and plans to hurt my family before we arrived. Are you saying that you have no knowledge of it?
We received your message. But this is a classic case of he said, she said.
You wouldn't be bending rules to cover for your family now, would you, Donald?"
"How dare you accuse me of such a thing?"
Donald roared.
"I am counselor and mentor to all, not just my family, as are we all on the council."
"Then, if you investigate the preposterous idea that Maggie could be pregnant after only being my son's significant for a couple of weeks, then you'll investigate the Watsons and what they did to my family,"
Peter demanded in a gravelly voice.
"I think you best watch,"
Donald started. but Gran cut him off.
Of course we'll investigate the Watsons, Donald. If such a claim was made against the Jacobsons, we'd investigate that as well, which is precisely why we have to have a hearing for Maggie and Caleb.
Everyone gasped, including me. What was Gran doing?
When a life is taken, there must be a hearing to determine if punishment is required. Two Watsons were killed at the home of Peter by Maggie and Caleb, and another was killed at the home of Max by another member of the Watson clan.
You know the rules, Winifred,
another member said.
The murder of a member of the same clan is dealt with within the clan. That has nothing to do with us. So let's get on with the dealing for Maggie and Caleb,
she said, and looked at us.
Who in the family will account for them?
I will,
Peter said, and began to recount everything that happened to us at his house and at Kyle's. While he was doing that, I turned to Caleb and spoke low with Kyle and Lynn huddled in as well.
What is Gran doing?
I asked. Why would she want them to—
She's not,
Caleb assured. He touched my cheek and gave me a sympathetic look. His hand coasted down to wrap around my wrist, his thumb rubbing my tattoo in possession. I shivered even in the tense circumstances. The side of Caleb's mouth tipped up at my reaction, but Kyle smacked his arm.
What? Dude.
Kyle complained and rolled his eyes. He looked back at me.
Gran's defusing. If she brings it up first instead of letting the Watsons tell their side, it'll look better for us. Make us look innocent.
We are innocent,
I insisted in a hiss.
They tried to—
I know,
he said quickly.
But they don't know that.
Okay, okay, I nodded, to make myself believe everything was going to be all right. This was so not how Caleb described the reunification to me. Caleb and Kyle both made it seem like a big party, like it was going to be fun hanging out, dancing, and talking. This was just not.
I'm sorry. If we had just imprinted and you'd just been you, it wouldn't have been this way. But because you're the visionary, I kind of expected some of this. Usually the council just sits up there the whole week and we barely see them. But because of what you are, they feel like they've got to make a scene or something. Why do I feel like I should apologize?
He smiled and pulled me to him, tucking my face into his neck.
Aw, baby,
he whispered.
You didn't mess anything up. They're just all a bunch of coots is all.
I like that, I told him quietly. Coots. Then we were jolted as a loud bang was issued. Donald was banging his fist on the clothed table again, face to face with Peter as he leaned toward him.
I've accounted for the details of what happened. My kids were just protecting themselves, and you can find no fault in that. Don't judge and jury me, Peter. This is not some human courtroom where you can play lawyer and weasel your way out of the rules and traditions that were set forth for us centuries ago. That's not what we're trying to do. The visionary and my son were not only justified in their actions, but would be dead, and many of us dead as well, if they hadn't done what they did. Irrelevant, and you know it.
Enough!
Gran yelled, and swiped at her hair that had fallen from her bun.
Good grief, you know the rules yourself, Donald Watson.
Watson. It all made sense now. Gran continued.
A hearing will be set, as is customary, and we'll vote nothing else to do about it. Now, both of you stop causing a scene and let everyone meet their visionary.
Quite right,
Donald agreed.
And a pregnancy test will be issued to Maggie to determine that she is not with child.
Pardon, Donald, Marla called, but she wouldn't be far enough along to be detected on a home pregnancy test.
She'll need a blood test.
As soon as the words left her mouth, I knew exactly what she was planning, though her thoughts were not open to me. Next, she would suggest that her aunt take my blood.
It just so happens that my Aunt Ruth, Sax's widow, has the ability to perform the blood draw without any pain or discomfort to the visionary.
Peter interjected.
This is ridiculous and disrespectful, to perform a test solely with the purpose of trying to catch the visionary in a lie. If she's not lying,
there should be no reason she would refuse the test.
I knew then that there was nothing I could say. He had us and he knew it. And so did Marla.
It's settled then.
Donald chimed, sounding all too thrilled with the idea. When he set his hands on the table, I caught a glimpse of his wrist tattoo, but couldn't make out the design. I looked to Peter and Caleb to see if they understood what I had concluded. Marla knew I wasn't pregnant. She was after more of my blood, and there was no way to refuse the test without looking like I was pregnant, and Marla knew I wouldn't risk Caleb being punished, whatever that meant. Caleb was reading me the whole time and nodded his knowing. He gritted his teeth, but tried to keep me calm. He smiled and rubbed my arm.
We'll figure this out. I'll go with you. I won't let her keep your blood.
I nodded back. Peter crossed his arms, his eyes blazing a line of disgust at Donald, but he said nothing. I didn't want to open my mind up to the room, honestly. I didn't want to know what everyone was thinking right then. But I assumed that Peter had come to the same conclusion we had. Rachel came and put her arms around him. I almost smiled as he instantly calmed and looked at her, a grateful look upon his face. We spent the next hour schmoozing, as Gran put it. I shook hundreds of hands, was bowed to more times than I could count, though I'd asked them not to, and was told multiple names that I would never remember. I also endured the looks from girls who were not happy that I was the one to snag Caleb. I tried not to take their looks of death and then quick smiles to keep the visionary from turning them to dust, personally. Then music started to play. I looked over to see a small stage with instruments, but no one was playing them. The instruments were playing themselves. Rather good, too, I might add.
They're charmed,
Caleb explained into my ear.
One of the Gemino clan members can charm objects to do their normal function.
So he can't make a guitar do the dishes or anything like that? Lynn asked.
No, just play music.
Lame. She complained in jest, and we laughed. She was nervous still. People couldn't take their eyes off of us for different reasons, but one common fact. We had imprinted. Lynn hated the attention, but Kyle was eating it up. He loved the fact that he had what everyone else envied.
How about a dance, pretty lady?
I heard behind me and turned to find Rodney, the one who found me and saved me in the woods that day at the Watson compound. I silently gasped and, without thinking, jumped to grab him around his neck. He held me to him and I felt him chuckle. I peeked over at Caleb, expecting to see a scowl of jealousy, but found only affection. He was still really grateful to Rodney as well. He saved my life, after all.
I guess that means that you remember who I am,
Rodney joked as he put my feet back to the floor. Of course I do, I replied. I saw his eyes catch the mark on my neck, and the look of affection changed to one of rapture. He smiled and did his bow-kiss-hand thing.
Visionary,
he whispered and smiled wider.
It makes me all the more proud to call you family.
Please, just Maggie, I insisted, and though he nodded, I knew it would take some persuasion. Then he turned to Caleb.
Caleb. Rodney, man, it's good to see you.
They hugged, bumping their fists and pounding backs.
You too, and Kyle, I see you've got an addition as well.
Yes, this is Lynn,
Kyle explained proudly.
Lynn, this is our cousin Rodney.
Nice to meet you, Lynn said and bumped fists with him. Are you from Tennessee, too? You've got the whole... She waved her hand in front of him. Cowboy look going on. And he did. He was meaty, dark, tanned with jeans and a plaid shirt. All that was needed to top off the picture was a cowboy hat.
I am from Tennessee, yes, ma'am,
he said in an exaggerated southern drawl.
In fact, I live on a farm with 50 horses.
Nuh-uh, Lynn said and leaned closer in interest. Really?
Cross my heart.
I love horses, she said and giggled in joy. Kyle grabbed her arm and started to drag her away, laughing.
I better get you away from Mr. Wild Horses over there.
Don't worry. You can just buy me a horse and then we'll be good.
Done,
Kyle said, and though he was laughing, I could tell he was absolutely going to buy her a horse. He nuzzled her neck, and they laughed. I glanced over to see Caleb watching me.
What?
I asked.
Just wondering what you're thinking, since you've got your brain turned off.
I'm just thinking that I'm glad Kyle has Lynn, I said without hesitation. I'm glad he's happy.
Me too.
He wrapped his arms around me from behind.
And not just because he was annoying the hell out of me over you. I'm just glad that we can be friends again.
Me too.
Me three.
Rodney said and laughed as he clapped Caleb on the shoulder.
I've missed you guys out at the ranch. Mom has too. She hasn't had anyone to bake sugar cookies for.
Yeah?
Caleb said thoughtfully.
We haven't been out there in months. You'll have to come soon. Mom's got a new Clydesdale. It's the biggest horse you've ever seen. We'll do that. We've just got to get a few things out of the way first.
Caleb said, and smiled against the back of my neck. 3. The night wore on. I wasn't really enjoying myself. I felt too much on display, so I wasn't in a dancing mood. Or an eating mood, as there was a huge spread of fruit. Everyone was whispering and sneaking peeks at us. When I caught one of them, they smiled and quickly looked away. I didn't know what to do about it. Soon, all my thoughts of self-pity flew away when the Watson, who had been my poltergeist since I met Caleb, decided that the evening needed a little more excitement.
Hello, little human,
Marcus said from behind us. We turned and I held Caleb's arm tight to keep him from charging him.
Nice haircut. Is it new?
He prodded with sarcasm. Then there was nothing I could do. Caleb launched himself at Marcus, pinning him to the wall behind him. Caleb's hands gripped his throat, and he growled in his face, oblivious to the astonished crowd that watched from across the room.
Don't you speak to her, ever. Ah, the Jacobson prince.
Marcus replied loudly and laughed.
How lucky for Maggie that she had such a big, strong boy to keep her safe from my insults. I said to shut up. We are stuck here with you this week, but that doesn't mean that you can torture Maggie the whole time. She is your visionary, and you will show some respect for that, if nothing else. What's going on here?
Donald yelled from behind us. I felt arms around me from behind and turned to find Rachel hugging me, with Peter flanking her. Donald came forward and stood next to Caleb, who still hadn't released Marcus.
I said, what's going on? Answer me.
Caleb is jealous of anyone who shows any affection to our visionary uncle.
Marcus sneered.
Marcus, I will.
Caleb started, but Donald cut him off.
Now, Caleb, I know how you must be feeling.
Donald clapped him on the back as if in sympathy.
But you can't be stingy with our visionary.
I'm not, and have no plans to be. Marcus has tortured Maggie for weeks and echoes and kidnappings, and a lot more. I won't let him do that to her this week.
Neither will I,
Donald said sternly.
Of course, anything that happened before was petty and uncalled for, but is over with, I'm sure, considering she is the visionary.
It sounded like a warning to Marcus, but Marcus just laughed and tipped his head. I almost opened my mind to him, but was scared to. I was afraid of what everyone was thinking, and was afraid to overload and appear weak in front of all these people, who expected so much from me.
There, you see, Caleb, let him go, son.
Caleb held for a few seconds longer, in obvious protest and his own warning to Marcus, and then came back to take my hand.
I think I'll take Maggie to her room now, Caleb said. It's been a long day.
Of course.
Donald conceded and smiled.
Your quarters, Caleb, are on the second floor. Maggie will remain here, on the first floor, with the rest of the assembly members. This year we've changed a few things around. I'm sure you can understand why.
No, sir.
Caleb replied and laughed a humorless laugh.
I don't think I do understand, but I'm sure there's an implication in there somewhere. Caleb,
Peter said quietly and came to stand next to us.
Donald, please just tell us what it is that you want us to know. We've all had a long day and would like to retire.
I'm sure with all the new raging significant hormones, that you can see why we'd have to separate the newly imprinted couples. In fact, even Lynn, who isn't a member of the council, will stay in the room next to Maggie's.
Whoa, wait a minute,
Caleb said, his voice going low and dangerous.
Are you saying that you're separating us for the night?
Yes, and not just tonight, but every night. It isn't proper for...
Donald,
Peter said incredulously. He turned to the rest of the council, who was littered among the noisy onlookers.
You know they will go into withdrawal during the night. Is that what you want for your visionary?
We've never let unmarried individuals sleep with each other before. Why would we start now?
Another assemblyman answered.
We've never had these circumstances before either.
Peter rebutted.
Usually the individuals, as you call them, are married within a couple of weeks and it's never an issue.
Exactly,
Donald said and scoffed.
Honestly, Peter, for you to suggest that they sleep together before marriage is just...
I'm not suggesting they do anything but sleep, Donald.
Peter replied dryly.
Still, our ways are best, and with good reason. Morals are the highest obligation and responsibility to our people. There are plans for them to marry, yes?
Of course.
Then,
Donald grinned and looked Caleb and me over.
Why not right now? Solve all the problems and be done with it. That would be like five birds with one stone.
He laughed at his own joke.
What?
Caleb said.
We're all here,
Donald explained tearfully.
You can perform the ceremony, Peter. I'm sure the participants are more than willing,
he said and smiled at me. You want us to get married? Like right now? I blurted out, and even I heard the disgust in my voice. From the shocked looks on the others' faces, they clearly misunderstood my disgust. It wasn't that I didn't want to get married to Caleb, but Dad and Bish weren't here. It was unthinkable. Are you opposed to marrying Caleb? Someone asked from behind me. Hasn't he asked you yet? No, he's asked me, I was cut off by many replies from all around me. I cringed into Rachel's chest and gripped Caleb's hand tighter. Having a wedding at the palace, that's never happened before.
Why wouldn't she want to marry him?
Humans, a woman scoffed. They never could cut ties. Shh, she's the visionary, she'll hear you.
All right, listen,
Peter yelled to stop them all.
This isn't right and you know it, Donald. You have spouted nothing but talk about tradition and rules put in place for us by our ancestors since the minute we walked through that door. We've never had a wedding here because it's a sacred thing that is done at the champion's home, and only the families involved are included. How dare you offer to marry them here so callously, in disrespect of the traditions for it? I'm just trying to solve the problem that you're so upset about. If they got married, then we would have no qualms about them staying in the same room. Marriage isn't just about some ceremony or piece of paper. It's about family and making a forever commitment to each other in front of the ones you love. For you to try to turn it into something so simple and trivial is ridiculous. It's practical. You're such a hypocrite.
I had no idea what to say. I looked at Caleb and realized I still had my mind turned off. Caleb had been awfully quiet throughout the whole thing, and now I knew why. He thought I was upset because I didn't want to marry him right now, that maybe after seeing his people that I wanted no part in it. I pulled from his mother and went the small distance to him. He accepted me into his arms easily and even tried to smile. You're such an idiot, I whispered and smiled up at him. How could he honestly believe that I wouldn't want him?
What?
He said, confused, but sucked in a quick breath when I touched his head to mine, opened my mind up and let him in. I let him feel everything I'd felt since we'd gotten there. I was scared, confused, worried, restless, and had no idea what I was supposed to do for these people. But one thing was for sure. I wanted to marry Caleb, just not because some old guy told me I had to. I wanted exactly what Peter had described, the whole experience and the sentiment and beautifulness of it. So I showed Caleb the vision he showed me, of that day of me in my red dress, to remind him that this wasn't our destiny, The vision showed exactly what was coming for us. Him and me. Lynn and Kyle, my bare feet on green, lush grass. And so many smiling faces. The council knew that we were going to be married one day, and the fact that they didn't trust us to do what our bodies needed during sleep, to keep us from pain, was pretty much a slap in the face. Caleb lifted his head, a little sheepishly, and looked at me. I bit my lip and smiled, but that quickly slid away as I realized we were surrounded by energy ribbons. I looked up and saw the picture of us twirling in our wedding attire in the air above us. Crap. I hadn't meant to, but I'd just shown the whole room the very private vision of us at our wedding. I looked over to see Donald watching. He looked at me differently, I could see that. He was just now realizing that he had no idea the things that I could do. I smiled at him as I spoke, to hopefully soften the blow of my words. I plan to marry him. In fact, it's more than a plan, I will marry him. But as you saw, it'll be on our time. My father isn't here or my brother, and I know that it's tradition for the human to leave her world behind when she joins you. But I didn't have that much to begin with. Bish and my dad are all that I have, and they... I wondered if I should tell them about the fact that they both knew about us all. I decided against it. Are really important to me. It's not really an option that they be present at the wedding or not. I want them there, and I want to do it at Peter's house. This isn't because I don't want to get married. I just don't want to be told that I have to. I'm sorry if you think I'm being disrespectful.
No, no, of course not.
Donald said quickly and shortly. Then he gulped as if he recognized that he had made a mistake. He smiled a crap-eating smile.
I understand, and forgive me for suggesting that you do something you weren't ready for.
I opened my mouth to protest, but Caleb grabbed my arm. He shook his head at me in an exasperated way that said not to put in the effort.
Enough,
Caleb said, and gripped my hand.
I'm taking Maggie to her room.
And you'll be dropping her off, and then heading upstairs to your own room, right?
Of course, Assemblyman.
Caleb said dryly and turned to his family.
Night.
Night, you two, Rachel said and hugged us both at the same time. She whispered to us,
Please, don't provoke them. We'll get through this.
She leaned back.
Caleb, just hold hands on the way to get as much touch as possible before you leave.
She grimaced.
I'm so sorry, Maggie. It's not usually this way.
So I've been told, I said with a smile. It wasn't Rachel's fault that this was happening. Don't worry about us. We'll be all right.
All right, everyone.
Another assemblyman called loudly.
Lights out is in 15 minutes. Everyone, make your way to your rooms, please.
Come on,
Caleb said to me, and didn't wait for anyone or anything else as he towed me behind him. I waved at Peter, Jen, and our family, who all stood off to the side looking very unhappy. Everyone else bowed slightly as I made my way out of the room. As we made our way to my bedroom, wherever that was, I couldn't help but ask my burning questions. Why did Gran stay so quiet? She's always so vocal about everything.
It's tricky. She can't be biased. She has to seem like she's not just making decisions for our family, but for everyone. If they think she's being unfair, they'll vote her out, and the Jacobsons won't have a say on the council anymore. But they can't touch her unless she gives them a reason.
Our shoulders brushed as we walked, and it sent shivers through me. One, because he was Caleb, and his touch did powerful things to me. And two, I knew I'd be without that touch all night, and I didn't even want to think about it.
I'm sorry. Like I said, it's usually not like...
This. I finished for him. I know. It's okay.
The council's just scared of you.
He said and sighed, sucking his lip in and out, frowning. They're just scared of your family. I corrected him. There is some major hostility there.
Well, even though Donald is a Watson, and the self-proclaimed leader of the council... We've never had any problems with him before. He's been silent enemies with my dad for as long as I can remember. But I've never heard Donald talk so much in all my life.
So they really aren't going to punish the Watsons?
The law says there can be no murder of another clan member for any reason. It doesn't state anything about attempted murder or kidnapping. The Virtuoso are very strict in their rules, but when there is no specific ruling against something, they won't interfere at all.
That's crap. He laughed and pulled me to a stop.
Yeah.
He agreed. And Marla has my blood in her, I said, and gulped down my disgust and discomfort about that. He nodded and twisted his lips. And the Watsons are going to be here the whole time. He nodded again. And Gran is on the council who wants to keep us apart or force us to marry. And I have to shut myself off every time I go into that room so I won't overload. And all those people want me to fix all of their problems. I huffed a breath and kept going to get it all out. And everyone keeps bowing and freaking out, even though I've asked them not to.
Babe, all that is true, yes, but you've got to get used to it,
he said softly.
The only way you can stop them from acting like a bunch of idiots is exactly like you showed me.
He looked at me pointedly.
Show them. Teach them. Be the strong, beautiful, amazing girl that I know you are, and eventually they'll come around. They won't have a choice but to.
I sighed and nodded. Okay, I'll try. He smiled and touched my cheek.
Good. Now here we are. You're sweet, my queen,
he said playfully and bowed as he opened the heavy door. Don't you start or I'll... Ah! I was flabbergasted. This couldn't be my room. Caleb must have made a mistake. It was huge. It was what I would imagine would be at the penthouse at the Waldorf. Not that I'd ever seen it or ever would. The walls were high and the molding was intricate. The wallpaper was thick lines of white and green, and the carpet was seriously plush and thick. There was a huge mahogany poster bed in the middle of the room, with white pillows and a white comforter that was as thick and big as a cloud. And the walls were lined with mahogany dressing tables and floor-length mirrors. But there were no windows. There wasn't much on the walls, but there was one painting of a city from the hillside. I think I stood staring, a little intimidated, too long because Caleb finally came up behind me, chuckling as he pulled me against him. He whispered in the skin of my neck,
"Pretty nice digs, huh?"
Are all the rooms like this?
Nope. The rooms on the second floor are nice, don't get me wrong, but they aren't like this.
He looked around.
I've never even been down here before.
He looked back at me.
Off limits.
And it's still off limits, I said sadly.
Yeah.
He sighed.
And I better get going. If they find me in here, it won't be good.
Yeah, I replied lamely. I turned in his arms and wasted no time. I pulled him down at the same time that I went onto my tiptoes. His lips really didn't comfort me. I figured that I was just too worked up, too upset. But I kissed the heck out of him anyway. And boy, did he kiss me back. 4. My veins screamed inside of me. Something didn't feel quite right, but my body was so happy that Caleb was here that I didn't dwell on it. I felt more than heard his growl against my mouth. Gosh, I loved it when he did that, like he was some animal and he was claiming me, letting everyone else know I was his. I lifted myself even more to be close to him, and just as his hand was sliding dangerously down my back, we heard someone make an annoyed sound to get our attention. We turned to see a man there. I had no idea who he was, but Caleb apparently did.
Custodian Michaels,
Caleb said and huffed.
Perfect timing. Caleb?
The man chastised, but stood in the doorway and didn't come any closer.
You know the rules. Come on, don't make me be the bad guy. I know the rules,
Caleb repeated sarcastically. He turned and kissed me once more on the side of my neck and smiled at me.
Good night, babe.
Then he went to the door. I was a little confused at how easily Caleb had just given in and left like that. Bye, I whispered. But they were both already gone. I closed my door and turned to lean against it, no matter how beautiful the room was. It wasn't me. I didn't want to stay here. It felt more like a pretty prison than a vacation. But what could I do now? I looked around and saw my luggage on the settee at the foot of my bed. I hoped there was a bathroom in my room because I desperately wanted a shower. After exploring a few doors and finding not only a huge walk-in closet that would put Queen Elizabeth to shame, but a snack bar, I finally found the bathroom. I was kind of surprised at how simple it was compared to the rest of the bedroom. It had a white clawfoot tub on one side and a stand-up stall shower on the other. I decided to shower tonight, but at least once before I left, I'd try out that beautiful cast-iron tub. There were even a few scrubs and salts off to the side, making it appear very much like a hotel. The few towels that were there were folded into little designs. Even the toilet paper was shaped into a point, all nice and petite. Who did all this? Were all the rooms this way? I decided I didn't care and took off my dress. I stepped into the shower and hurried through a hot one. It had been forever since I'd slept by myself. I stood over my open luggage and stared down the dresses I'd brought. Tomorrow, I'd have to get all dressed up and pretend to be their leader. Wait. It hit me like the ceiling had collapsed on me. I was such an idiot. No wonder everyone treated me so strangely, and no wonder Donald was such a jackass. I had acted like a scared little rabbit out there. I shut my mind off so I had no idea what was going on and what everyone was thinking, and I was blindsided because of it. They wanted to use me as a pawn, as an object of worth and not a person, and I had let them. Ugh, how could I be so stupid? No more. Tomorrow, I would keep my mind open at all times. I would not cower behind Caleb's family, and I wouldn't let Donald think I was here simply for him to display his traditional side. And Marla and Marcus, I wouldn't let them humiliate me and turn everyone against me before I even got to know anyone. I was the visionary for a reason. I was Caleb's significant for a reason. I was brought into this point of my life for a reason. I was me for a reason. No one was going to take the reins of my own life but me. Tomorrow was a new day, and I was going to make it my own. I pulled on a yellow polka dot camisole and a pair of white boy short underwear and climbed into bed. My hair was still wet, and I hated to go to bed with wet hair, but I was in no mood to stand around in that bathroom and see if the wall plugs were compatible in London or not. I wanted to just think. I lay there, looking at that gorgeous molded white ceiling. I grabbed my cell off the top of my purse, but there was no signal. I wanted to call Dad, but I guessed that would have to wait. I was sure he was worried sick. I'd put him through a lot lately, and Bish, too. Ugh. I rolled over to press my face into the pillow. It smelled like lemons. It was almost comical how hard it was to fall asleep now. I felt uncomfortable. I rubbed my feet together, but that didn't help. I rolled to my side. I even pulled a pillow down to lay beside me as if it were Caleb, but still, no help. I eventually rolled onto my back, slipped the lamp switch, and just decided to strategize about the next day. I would walk with my head high. I would show them that both of my tattoos, the visionary one and the mutualizing one, were worn with pride and affection. I would show them that Caleb wasn't some stupid kid who couldn't take care of things. He was my guy. He was my protector. He was my everything. And what the... There was a foot hanging from my ceiling. No, through my ceiling. I sat up and blinked a few times to see if I was really awake or had fallen asleep somehow. The foot jerked and moved. I heard muffled curses, and then there was a whole blue-jeaned leg, and then two. Then someone fell through the ceiling toward my bed. I somehow muzzled my scream and scooted over just as he fell onto the other side of my large bed with a bounce. Caleb glared at the ceiling.
You suck at that, just so you know, Uncle Kev.
I looked up to see a man's head sticking out of the ceiling.
Sorry, you're not as little as you used to be, you know.
The man grumbled and then changed his gaze to me. He smiled and winked.
You're welcome.
A pair of shoes fell through the ceiling as well, landing on Caleb's stomach. And then he was gone. Caleb? I breathed as I sat up further. What are you doing here? He grinned, and I noticed he was barefoot with his jeans and a white undershirt on. He slid closer on his knees and pulled me to him.
There was no way I was letting you out of my sight tonight.
I giggled silently and hugged him. My spirits lifted. He was the balm to my ache still, and always would be. His hands drifted up my legs and didn't stop. I realized he was going to stop at the hem of my shorts, but I wasn't wearing any, so he had no stopping point. When he realized the same thing, his hands gripped me. He stopped breathing and his heart beat fast against my chest. He finally let his breath out slowly as I stayed perfectly still. His hands moved a little to confirm what he already knew I was wearing, and I fought not to shiver. He leaned back and looked at my face closely.
What the hell are these, Maggie?
They're boy shorts? I stuttered.
These are not shorts.
He rumbled. I didn't think I'd see you tonight. I defended in a whisper. He bit his lip and cocked an eyebrow as he looked me over.
You wore these because you didn't think you'd see me?
He chuckled at my confused expression.
I'm just joking, baby.
He sighed a long, meaningful sigh.
I think you better put something on, though, before I stop being so in control.
Yeah, I agreed, but I couldn't help myself. Did he know how incredibly hot he was in his bare feet and white t-shirt? Did he even realize that his hands were still sitting right under my butt on my legs? Did he know how grateful I was to him for somehow finding a way to come to me, even when he'd been forbidden not to? I kissed him with every intention of mutualizing with him. Call me brazen, call me testing his control, call me anything you want, but I couldn't have waited another second. My body, my imprint, demanded for him. He pushed me back easily to the bed and took my arms to press them over my head. I whispered to him, "Why do you always do that? Hold my arms down."
"Because if you touched me right now."
He shook his head like he couldn't even think and started kissing me again. I opened my mind and waited for the tingle, the spark, the cooling of my blood, but it never came. I was warm, in fact, I was on fire, but that was hormones, not mutualizing. He pulled back and looked confused, too. Then his look morphed to one of anger. He sat back on his heels and laughed humorlessly.
"Those bastards,"
he growled.
"What?"
I sat up.
"What did they do?"
"They charmed the room,"
he explained. He ran his hands through his hair.
"I thought it was strange before, that I didn't feel anything when you touched me, when I was in here earlier. But I just assumed we were both too worked up, too upset, and that was why."
"You mean..." I worked it out in my mind. "They got someone to use their ability to make it so that there are no abilities in this room?" He nodded. I hadn't heard any of his thoughts, and he was right. I had felt something strange when he'd kissed me before, when he said goodbye. It felt weird because it was just us and no imprint. No healing touch, no reading minds, no mutualizing?
"Nope."
I sighed in exasperation. They were testing the limits of my control. "And your uncle? The one who shot you through the ceiling?"
"Uncle Kev,"
he explained. "Yeah. His ability is to what? Because if he was the one who did this, I'll go break all of his light bulbs." He chuckled silently.
"His ability is to do basically what he did. He can put objects or people through walls, doors, and apparently the ceiling."
He smiled.
"Were you surprised?"
Yeah. I bit my lip and thought. "So even if you sleep in here with me, we'll still be in withdrawal by morning, won't we?"
"Yeah."
His smile turned into a frown.
"They had to have done this before we came. They knew we were going to fight them on it. They wanted to cover all of their bases."
"Why is our sex life so interesting to them?" I blurted. He gave me a look that could have melted bones. "I meant our mutualizing life. You know what? Whatever, you know what I mean." He laughed.
"You are so cute, all flustered."
Not flustered, I argued.
Not?
He challenged and leaned closer. I gulped and he laughed again.
Get dressed, gorgeous. I'm taking you out of here.
Where?
Get dressed.
He grinned as he leaned back on the bed, putting his arms behind his head on the pillows.
Go ahead,
he ordered.
Get some clothes on.
I realized he was going to see me striding around in my boy shorts while I found some clothes.
Fine. If he wanted to see, and he apparently did, he could look all he wanted to.
I had found my second wind, my reasoning, my gumption, and I wasn't going to be silly little scared Maggie anymore. I smiled as I stood up and waltzed over to the suitcase. I pulled out a pair of jeans, my only pair of jeans that I had brought, and started to slip them on. I felt him at my back. Even though I couldn't read his mind right then, somehow, I just knew that he wasn't going to be able to just sit there and watch. It was very empowering.
Mean,
he taunted and kissed the back of my neck. I was just doing what you told me to.
Touché.
He kissed my neck once more and looked around the room.
You'll need a sweater or something.
I have a cargo jacket in that bag, I said and pointed as I buttoned my jeans. I slipped on my blue Converses just as he brought my jacket. He helped me put it on and then put his shoes on quickly. What about you?
I'll be fine. Come on.
Are you going to tell me where we're going? I asked as he dragged me to the door.
Nope.
He opened the door and peeked out. He gave me one last look.
Be very quiet, church mouse quiet.
Got it, I whispered. He took my hand and we both stopped for a second as our touch hit us. I could feel him again just by stepping into the hall. I sighed and soaked him up. It was true then, no question, they had charmed the room.
Yeah, let's not start that again, or I'll do something I'll regret.
We crept down the hall to the next room down. He scratched on the door with his fingernail, and Lynn immediately opened the door wearing a little pink hoodie. She opened her mouth as if to scream while she smiled, but it was silent. She bounced on her toes as she came out of the room and gripped me in a tight hug. Caleb closed her door quietly and grabbed her hand too, shushing her as he dragged us down the hall. He took us through some heavy double doors at the other end of the hall. It was all dark, lit only by little gas sconces on the wall. I could hear them hissing as we passed. Once we were through the doors, he opened the door to some stairs. It was cold and drafty, but he urged us forward. Lynn went first, and she was back to her old self, smiley, chipper, bouncy, almost annoying in her giddiness. I understood what she was going through. The assembly and all those people staring at us before had been very intimidating, and now she felt free to be herself again. When we finally reached the top of the stairs, I learned why she was so giddy. She squealed as we hit the cold air of the outside and ran to Kyle, who was waiting there for us. She jumped into his arms and wrapped her arms and legs around him. I laughed as I turned to Caleb.
You planned this, all of this?
Yeah.
How?
I have my ways,
he said playfully. Lynn pulled away from Kyle long enough to laugh and say,
Yeah, your Uncle Kevin scared the crap out of me when he stuck his head through my door to tell me.
We laughed and Caleb took my hand once more. I sighed as I got a heavy dose of his tingly, healing touch.
Come on, gorgeous,
he whispered.
This isn't the surprise. We're just getting started.
5. We were on some sort of balcony. The rooftops were surrounding us, connected and strange, like hilltops. Kyle pulled Lynn behind him to follow him.
We're going on the roof? I asked.
Yep,
Caleb answered.
And while we're on the roof, with great cell service...
The only cell service,
Kyle yelled.
I thought you might want to call your dad. I'm sure he's worried. It's daytime there already.
I smiled. Yes, I do. Thank you. He handed me his cell and I dialed the number as he helped me over the small ridges of the roof. It only rang a couple of times before Dad picked up.
Hello, Maggie?
He said without waiting for an answer.
Dad!
Oh, thank you, God, I've been so worried.
I know, there isn't any cell service here in the in the house. I cleared my throat and tried to sound happy and at ease, so he wouldn't worry more. But we're having fun, it's a huge, beautiful place.
Has Caleb taken you to London to see the city? It's pretty remarkable from what I've heard.
Not yet, but I had to catch my breath when Caleb pulled me to the top of the last ridge and stood behind me. We were overlooking the city right then, and it was breathtaking. All the lights, the buildings, the people.
If Jim had only waited another minute to ask you that question.
Caleb joked into my ear.
Maggie, hello?
Dad said loudly. Oh, sorry, still here?
Well, what's going on?
Nothing. Just looking at the city now. I wish you were here, Dad. I said, and I meant it. I wish you could see this.
Me too, kiddo.
He sighed long. How's Bish?
He had an interview today. Don't know how it went yet, but I've got my fingers crossed for him.
Me too. I hope it works out.
Hey, did Caleb's sister go with you?
Yeah, I answered carefully, not liking where the conversation was going.
Just wondering, Bish is doing an awful lot of moping. I thought maybe they could have lunch or something. He needs to get out.
I sighed.